There was nothing for Frodo to do but to fall in with this request, or order. It seemed in any case a wise course for the moment, since this foray of the men of Gondor had made a journey in Ithilien more dangerous than ever. They set out at once, Mablung and Dumrod a little ahead, and Faramir, with Frodo and Sam, behind. Skirting the hither side of the pool where the hobbits had bathed, they crossed the stream, climbed a long bank, and passed into green-shadowed woodlands that marched ever downwards and westwards. While they walked, as swiftly as the hobbits could go, they talked in hushed voices. "I broke off our speech together," said Faramir, "not only because time pressed, as Master Samwise had reminded me, but also because we were drawing near to matters that were better not debated openly before many men. It was for that reason that I turned rather to the matter of my brother and let be Isildur's bane. You were not wholly frank with me, Frodo." "I told no lies, and of the truth all I could," said Frodo. "I do not blame you," said Faramir. "You spoke with skill in a hard place, and wisely, it seemed to me. But I learned, or guessed, more from you than your words said. You were not friendly with Boromir, or you did not part in friendship. You, and Master Samwise, too, I guess, have some grievance. Now I loved him dearly, and would gladly avenge his death, yet I knew him well. Isildur's bane? I would hazard that Isildur's bane lay between you, and was a cause of contention in your company. Clearly it is a mighty heirloom of some sort, and such things do not breed peace among confederates, not if aught may be learned from ancient tales. Do I not hit near the mark?" "Near," said Frodo, "but not in the gold. There was no contention in our company, though there was doubt. Doubt which way we should take from the Emmenweal. But be that as it may, ancient tales teach us also the peril of rash words concerning such things as heirlooms." "Ah, then, it is as I thought. Your trouble was with Boromir alone. He wished this thing brought to Minas Tirith. Alas! It is a crooked fate that seals your lips who saw him last, and holds from me that which I long to know. What was in his heart and thought in his latest hours? Whether he erred or no, of this I am sure. He died well, achieved some good thing. His face was more beautiful even than in life. But, Frodo, I pressed you hard at first about Isildur's bane. Forgive me. It was unwise in such an hour and place. I had not had time for thought. We'd had a hard fight, and there was more than enough to fill my mind. But even as I spoke with you, I drew nearer to the mark and so deliberately shot wider. For you must know that much is still preserved of ancient lore among the rulers of the city that is not spread abroad. We of my house are not of the line of Elendil, though the blood of Numenor is in us. For we reckon back our line to Mardil, the good steward, who ruled in the king's stead when he went away to war. And that was King Earnor, last of the line of Anarion, and childless, and he never came back. And the stewards have governed the city since that day, though it was many generations of men ago. And this I remember of Boromir as a boy, when we together learned the tale of our sires and the history of our city, that always it displeased him that his father was not king. How many hundreds of years needs it to make a steward a king, if the king returns not? He asked. Few years, maybe, in other places of less royalty, my father answered. In Gondor 10,000 years would not suffice. Alas, poor Boromir! Does that not tell you something of him?
It does, said Frodo.
Yet always he treated Aragorn with honour. I doubt it not, said Faramir. If he were satisfied of Aragorn's claim, as you say, he would greatly reverence him. But the pinch has not yet come. They had not yet reached Minas Tirith or become rivals in her wars. But I stray. We in the house of Denethor know much ancient lore by long tradition, and there are moreover in our treasuries many things preserved, books and tablets writ on withered parchments, yea, and on stone, and on leaves of silver and of gold, in divers characters. Some none can now read, and for the rest, few ever unlock them. I can read a little in them, for I have had teaching. It was these records that brought the Grey Pilgrim to us. I first saw him when I was a child, and he's been twice or thrice since then.
The Grey Pilgrim? Said Frodo. Had he a name?
Mithrandir we called him in elf fashion, said Faramir, and he was content. Many are my names in many countries, he said. Mithrandir among the elves, Tharkoon to the dwarves. Olorin I was in my youth in the west, that is forgotten. In the south, in Carnos. In the north, Gandalf. To the east I go not.
Gandalf, said Frodo. I thought it was he. Gandalf the Grey, dearest of counsellors, leader of our company. He was lost in Moria.
Mithrandir was lost, said Faramir. An evil fate seems to have pursued your fellowship. It is hard indeed to believe that one of so great wisdom and of power, for many wonderful things he did among us, could perish, and so much lore be taken from the world.
Are you sure of this?
And that he did not just leave you and depart where he would?
Alas,
yes, said Frodo. I saw him fall into the abyss. I see that there is some great tale of dread in this, said Faramir, which perhaps you may tell me in the evening time. This Mithrandir was, I now guess, more than a law-master, a great mover of the deeds that are done in our time. Had he been among us to consult concerning the hard words of our dream, he could have made them clear to us without need of messenger. Yet maybe he wouldn't have done so, and the journey of Boromir was doomed. Mithrandir never spoke to us of what was to be, nor did he reveal his purposes. He got leave of Denethor, how I don't know, to look at the secrets of our treasury, and I learned a little of him, when he would teach, and that was seldom. Ever he would search and would question us above all else concerning the great battle that was fought upon Dagolad in the beginning of Gondor, when he, whom we do not name, was overthrown. And he was eager for stories of Isildur, though of him we had less to tell, for nothing certain was ever known among us of his end. Now Faramir's voice sank to a whisper. But this much I learned, or guessed, and I have kept it ever secret in my heart since, that Isildur took somewhat from the hand of the unnamed ere he went away from Gondor, never to be seen among mortal men again. Here, I thought, was the answer to Mithrandir's questioning. But it seemed then a matter that concerned only the seekers after ancient learning. Nor, when the riddling words of our dream were debated among us, did I think of Isildur's bane as being the same thing. For Isildur was ambushed and slain by orc arrows, according to the only legend that we knew, and Mithrandir had never told me more. What in truth this thing is, I cannot yet guess, but some heirloom of power and peril it must be, a fell weapon, perchance, devised by the Dark Lord. If it were a thing that gave advantage in battle, I can well believe that Boromir, the proud and fearless, often rash, ever anxious for the victory of Minas Tirith, and his own glory therein, might desire such a thing and be allured by it. Alas, that ever he went on that errand. I should have been chosen by my father and the elders, but he put himself forward as being the older and the hardier, both true, and he would not be stayed. But fear no more. I would not take this thing if it lay by the highway. Not were Minas Tirith falling in ruin, and I alone could save her, so, using the weapon of the Dark Lord for her good and my glory. No, I do not wish for such triumphs, Frodo, son of Drogo. Neither did the council, said Frodo, nor do I. I would have nothing to do with such matters.
For myself, said Faramir, I would see the white tree in flower again in the courts of the kings, and the silver crown return, and Minas Tirith in peace. Minas an Or again as of old, full of light, high and fair, beautiful as a queen among other queens, not a mistress of many slaves, nay, not even a kind mistress of willing slaves. War must be, while we defend our lives against a destroyer who would devour all. But I don't love the bright sword for its sharpness, nor the arrow for its swiftness, nor the warrior for his glory. I love only that which they defend, the city of the men of Numenor, and I would have her loved for her memory, her ancientry, her beauty, and her present wisdom. Not feared, save as men may fear the dignity of a man, old and wise. So fear me not. I don't ask you to tell me more. I don't even ask you to tell me whether I now speak nearer the mark. But if you will trust me, it may be that I can advise you in your present quest, whatever that be, yes, and even aid you. Frodo made no answer. Almost he yielded to the desire for help and counsel to tell this grave young man, whose words seemed so wise and fair, all that was in his mind. But something held him back. His heart was heavy with fear and sorrow. If he and Sam were indeed, as seemed likely, all that was now left of the Nine Walkers, then he was in sole command of the secret of their errand. Better mistrust undeserved than rash words. And the memory of Boromir, of the dreadful change that the lure of the ring had worked in him, was very present to his mind when he looked at Faramir and listened to his voice. Unlike they were, and yet also much akin. They walked on in silence for a while, passing like grey and green shadows under the old trees, their feet making no sound. Above them many birds sang, and the sun glistened on the polished roof of dark leaves in the evergreen woods of Ithilien. Sam had taken no part in the conversation, though he had listened. And at the same time he had attended with his keen hobbit ears to all the soft woodland noises about them. One thing he had noted, that in all the talk the name of Gollum had not once come up. He was glad, though he felt that it was too much to hope that he would never hear it again. He soon became aware also that though they walked alone, there were many men close at hand. Not only Damrod and Mablung flitting in and out of the shadows ahead, but others on either side, all making their swift secret way to some appointed place. Once, looking suddenly back, as if some prickle of the skin told him that he was watched from behind, he thought he caught a brief glimpse of a small dark shape slipping behind a tree trunk. He opened his mouth to speak and shut it again. "I'm not sure of it," he said to himself. "And why should I remind them of the old villain, if they choose to forget him? I wish I could." So they passed on, until the woodlands grew thinner and the land began to fall more steeply. Then they turned aside again, to the right, and came quickly to a small river in a narrow gorge. It was the same stream that trickled far above out of the round pool, now grown to a swift torrent, leaping down over many stones in a deep cloven bed, overhung with ilex and dark boxwoods. Looking west, they could see, below them in a haze of light, lowlands and broad meads, and glinting far off in the westering sun the wide waters of the Anduin.
"Here, alas, I must do you a discourtesy," said Faramir. "I hope you will pardon it to one who has so far made his orders give way to courtesy as not to slay you or to bind you. But it is a command that no stranger, not even one of Rohan that fights with us, shall see the path we now go with open eyes. I must blindfold you."
"As you will," said Frodo. "Even the elves do likewise at need, and blindfolded we crossed the borders of fair Lothlorien. Gimli the dwarf took it ill, but the hobbits endured it."
"'It is no place so fair that I shall lead you,' said Faramir. "'But I am glad that you will take this willingly, and not by force.' He called softly, and immediately Marblung and Damrod stepped out of the trees and came back to him. "'Blindfold these guests,' said Faramir, "'securely, but not so as to discomfort them. "'Do not tie their hands. "'They will give their word not to try and see. "'I could trust them to shut their eyes of their own accord, "'but eyes will blink if the feet stumble. "'Lead them so that they do not falter.' With green scarves the two guards now bound up the hobbits' eyes, and drew their hoods down almost to their mouths. Then quickly they took each one by the hand and went on their way. All that Frodo and Sam knew of this last mile of the road they learned from guessing in the dark. After a little they found that they were on a path descending steeply. Soon it grew so narrow that they went in single file, brushing a stony wall on either side. Their guards steered them from behind with hands laid firmly on their shoulders. Now and again they came to rough places, and were lifted from their feet for a while, and then set down again. Always the noise of the running water was on their right hand, and it grew nearer and louder. At length they were halted. Quickly Marblung and Damrod turned them about, several times, and they lost all sense of direction. They climbed upwards a little. It seemed cold, and the noise of the stream had become faint. Then they were picked up and carried down, down many steps, and round a corner. Suddenly they heard the water again, loud now, rushing and splashing. All round them it seemed, and they felt a fine rain on their hands and cheeks. At last they were set on their feet once more. For a moment they stood so, half fearful, blindfold, not knowing where they were, and no one spoke. Then came the voice of Faramir close behind. "'Let them see,' he said. The scarves were removed and their hoods drawn back, and they blinked and gasped. They stood on a wet floor of polished stone, the doorstep, as it were, of a rough-hewn gate of rock opening dark behind them. But in front a thin veil of water was hung, so near that Frodo could have put an outstretched arm into it. It faced westward. The level shafts of the setting sun behind beat upon it, and the red light was broken to many flickering beams of ever-changing colour. It was as if they stood at the window of some elven tower, curtained with threaded jewels of silver and gold and ruby, sapphire and amethyst, all kindled with an unconsuming fire. "'At last, by good chance, we come at the right hour to reward you for your patience,' said Faramir. "'This is the window of the sunset, Henethanun, fairest of all the fair of Ithilien, land of many fountains. Few strangers have ever seen it, but there is no kingly hall behind to match it. Enter now and see.' Even as he spoke the sun sank, and the fire faded in the flowing water. They turned and passed under the low, forbidding arch. At once they found themselves in a rock chamber, wide and rough, with an uneven, stooping roof. A few torches were kindled and cast a dim light on the glistening walls. Many men were already there. Others were still coming in by twos and threes through a dark, narrow door on one side. As their eyes grew accustomed to the gloom, the hobbits saw that the cave was larger than they had guessed, and was filled with great store of arms and victuals. "'Well, here is our refuge,' said Faramir. "'Not a place of great ease, but here you may pass the night in peace. It is dry, at least, and there is food, though no fire. At one time the water flowed down through this cave and out of the arch, but its course was changed further up the gorge by workmen of old, and the stream sent down in a fall of doubled height over the rocks far above. All the ways into this grot were then sealed against the entry of water or aught else, all save one. There are now but two ways, that passage yonder by which you entered blindfold, and through the window curtain into a deep bowl filled with knives of stone. Now rest a while, until the evening meal is set.